I always have to turn on 14 different buttons to be able to begin. It's not like the old days. Welcome to all of you. I would like to ask you to turn your Bibles to 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter. If you're visiting, you're welcome. We're glad you're here. Of course, we're glad for everybody who came back tonight, even knowing I was going to preach. And, you know, I must have developed a reputation somewhere along the way because I can't walk in here when I'm going to preach without somebody talking about me preaching 65 minutes. I can never remember preaching 65 minutes. I just much preached long lessons. We'll try not to make it too long tonight. We appreciate your attention in advance. I hope that what you'll listen to is God's Word. I believe it is, or at least the part of it that we try to apply. And I'm going to try to kind of let you into a little bit on how I study tonight while talking about a very important text. Let's go ahead and read the text, if you would. 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter. I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love. I find myself more and more as I get older coming back to the concept that the Bible has about love. God loved us, so he gave his son. We love because God loved us. We know how to love one another, because God gives us the Word. And this text is a foundational text for that. You can approach it lots of ways. I want to make a couple of points, and then I just want to dive into some of the characteristics of love and make some points out of that. And I want to start by saying that our love validates our works. Notice that he talks about a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. He talks in that first verse about random noise. And he talks about all those great works he could do. And he says, but if I don't have love, it's just a bunch of noise. Our love validates our worth. He goes on, he talks about some more stuff he could do. And he says, but if I have love, I am nothing. That is, there's no significance to me without love. And what I do is ephemeral. And then it validates our profit. Notice he says, if I don't do these things, if I do all these things and I have not love, I gain nothing. So love then sits at the center of what validates our work for God. At the end of the chapter, he talks about love never ending. He makes the point within the context, 1 Corinthians 13:14, where there's all this argument about speaking in tongues and other things. He says, God's miraculous gifts were temporarily given to perfect spiritual knowledge. They're going to end. He says, but God says through Paul, his people's need for faith, hope, and love will endure until eternity. Those three abide, he says, because the other goes away when that's perfect, but it takes it one step further. Of those three enduring characteristics. Love is the greatest because it will continue to endure. Faith is swallowed up in sight. At the redemption of our lives and our souls, faith becomes real. And hope is realized. What's left? Love. And so we look at the beginning of this text, and we look at the end of this text, and we draw one conclusion. Love is not optional. Love is foundational, love is ratifying, love is validating, and love lasts forever. Love is not optional. And so in between then there, he talks about love's characteristics. And the second point made throughout, and if you read those characteristics, you'll tell, is love is as love does. I think sometime in our modern society, we want to think about love as something that exists independently of our actions. You tell somebody you love them, and then you treat them horribly. You tell God you love Him, and then you don't live in accordance with His will. Love is as love does. And these characteristics are very practical characteristics that when we look at them in our lives, they play out appropriately. If you say you love anything, and you don't act in accordance with that love, either you don't love them really, or you just love them very poorly. Love is as love does. And we need to understand that. So then now in between, you have all these demands about love. It says, you know, love is patient and kind, and it goes on about that. And so you have all these characteristics. The words are not hard. You do not have to go to lexicons and look really close at a bunch of Bible dictionaries to understand patience. Doing it is hard. Understanding it's not. The reason this text is so hard for so many of us is not the fact that we can't understand the words. We understand concept of patient and kind and not envying and not boasting and not arrogant or rude. We understand that. We understand what those words mean. And we particularly understand when somebody's not treating us right, how they're not being loving. So how do I determine what love demands? And here you get a little bit of my own approach to things. First of all, you look at the characteristic that describes love. Second of all, you figure out what that word means. And you don't need a big lexicon. If you aren't sure, open the dictionary and read it right there. And then what you do is you say, okay, what are the synonyms for that word? Okay, maybe that word's not as plain to me. What are the synonyms? And then you say, well, what are the antonyms? What are the opposite words? So, for example, if love is patient, there are things love is not that are implied by patience. So you go look at the antonyms, and you go find parallel verses, and you get as much information about that, and then you find examples that illustrate the meaning in real life. It's that simple. And then when you find those examples, you say, okay, am I meeting those examples? And then it gets really hard because we're not meeting the examples far too often, and we have to change. The hardest thing to do is change how you act to accommodate somebody else. And that's what these characteristics talk about. Let me show you how it works in practice. It says, love is patient. An antonym to that word, because I'm going to use antonyms tonight. Love is not agitated. Love is not troubled. Love is not frustrated. See how the opposites fit the word? So then you say, okay, well, if love is not agitated or troubled or frustrated, what does this mean? And okay, now I'm going to start giving the examples, and you're going to say, preacher, you've gone from preaching to meddling. You don't like my examples, make your own examples. I mean, you don't have to take mine. These are the examples that speak to me. These are examples from my life and from what I see in the world and at work and all those kinds of things. There's hopefully some examples in here for young people and some examples in here for older people. But if you don't like these examples, figure out your own. But whatever you do, realize that these words have examples that will affect your life. And that's what I'm trying to show here. Love is not agitated, troubled, or frustrated. How's this one? Love does not let the inconveniences of everyday living affect your mood. Think about that. Now, I haven't done any dishonor to the text. All I've done is said, well, if love is patient, and these are the opposite of patience, here's an example of how I can live that. Don't ask my youngest son to describe me when I go to the drive-thru before the really good day shift gets on when they have the overnighters, and I have to wait 15 minutes for my tacos. I am not patient because I've let the inconveniences of everyday living affect my mood. And I start acting in ways that, to use what Garrett said this morning, they aren't me. Except they are me when I don't show love. Love doesn't let unexpected events agitate you. Love keeps teaching calmly when someone just doesn't get it. Think about that. For those of you, we have a teacher training class in the back. Sooner or later, you will come across some knucklehead. And I raised my hand there because I was very much, I had a lot of wonderful mentor who just kind of kept hammering the rough edges off. Didn't work real well, but it works better than you'd think. You're going to come across somebody who, no matter how you explain it, no matter how many times you tell them, no matter how many scriptures you show them, they just don't get it. And you know what? Patience says, okay, let's try another way. When Paul is talking to people, when he's talking about how to correct, he says, be patient with them all. And we need to understand that. Love is not agitated, troubled, frustrated with the things of the world. Love is patient. Love is kind. Opposite of kind is cruel, harsh, hasty. So, love is not cruel, harsh, or hasty. Now, what are some examples of cruelty, harshness, and hastiness that I can come up? How about that one? Does not insult... I'm sorry, nasty, you're right. I kept saying hasty. That's what happens when you can't read anymore. But love doesn't insult someone you're mad at. You know, you get mad at somebody and the first thing that pops out of your mouth is something that just is not appropriate. Kids, here's one for you. Love does not ridicule people in order to be popular. Junior high is a snake pit. Senior high is not far behind. And it's pack mentality. And you watch those kids out there and they start making fun of folks. And it can be anybody. Today it'll be one person. And you have to decide how popular you want to be. But in order to be popular, you ridicule people. That's not kind. That's cruel. Love does not use harshness to make a point. And that's easy. Somebody doesn't listen. Somebody hasn't listened, and I'm at my wit's end trying to figure out how to get something through. And what do I want to do? I want to be harsh. I want to be as loud and as brash and as nasty as I can just to get their attention. And I go away justifying myself because, after all, I got my point across. I have a real problem with anger. Luckily for me, it takes a lot to get me angry. But once I get angry, you don't want to be around me. And the hardest thing for someone who is angry to do is to not take it out on others. If
But that's harsh. That's cruel. That's nasty. Love does not envy. Envy is resentful desire to have the possessions of another. So, love does not envy. That is, it finds satisfactions when others have what you want. You look at somebody, they have something you want. And you can be satisfied with that in your heart. Or, love finds contentment in what you have. And both of them are there, right, in envy. In envy, I want badly and I resent it when somebody else has good fortune. And that's because of two things. That's because they have something I want and I don't like what I have. So, how does that work? Here's another one for the kids. Love is content when your friend has the boyfriend or girlfriend you wanted. You ever see that play out in everyday life? And adults too. I heard that. Jim's down there saying adults. I've seen that in adults too. And sometimes you see it with married people in the world. Hopefully not among God's people. Love is okay when someone is smarter or more talented than you. How many of us envy other people's talent? Love is happy when your friend gets your promotion. Oh, now we're hitting close to home. Or look at the other way. Love is content with your 212,000-mile Honda Odyssey. How about this one for those of us who are older? Love is content with the aches and pains of advancing years. How many of us are envious of the strength and energy of youth? How many of us look at those and it almost eats us up because we have such a problem waking up in the morning or moving? How's this one for the kids? Love is content when your parents are stricter than your friend's parents. How many kids envy, oh, you have the best parents, they tell their friends. And their friend says, no, you have the best parents. And we're so dissatisfied with where we are because we're envying everything else. I don't like the fact that I have an old car, so I want a new one. And I don't like the fact that I have this family, and I want a new one. And you get grass is always greener, and it all comes out of that envy. Love does not boast. The opposite of boasting is showing modesty and success. So how does love show modesty when you are blessed with success? Love avoids publicizing the things you do buy or have. Hear about this. I got this brand new fill in the blank. And it's okay to be happy. But I think sometimes the happiness goes over into boasting. Now, this is the flip side of the being okay when somebody's more talented than you. Love doesn't make sure everyone knows how much more skill you have than someone else. And these are things of everyday life. I didn't have to go far. I can look at what happens at work to find most of these. Love does not trash talk. That's a form of boasting. And I can do that better than you. And I know people joke. And I know people don't mean, quote unquote, anything by it. But ultimately, when you take it to its extreme, you have a problem. Maybe that's not a problem for you. It's a real problem for me. Love is not arrogant. Love is humble. Love makes you approachable when you have messed up. Humility is essential to growth. The lack of an arrogant person will not grow, period, because they are not approachable. Love makes you approachable when you've messed up. Love acknowledges faults when they're pointed out to you. Love accepts rebuke. Love accepts correction without blowing up. Love always tries to change for the better. Only the humble get there. The arrogant don't. So love then enables all those ways. And I will tell you something that in my experience, people who are arrogant with those on this earth who try to bring something to their attention will be equally arrogant before God. Teachability, humility, correctability are universal attributes. And if we won't listen to those here who try to help us with that, we're not going to listen to God. Love is not rude. Love is polite. Now, we all know what polite means, right? So, love says, please, thank you, and you're welcome. Oh, wait a minute. Those are all culture. Those are just cultural. Yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. That's something the South does. Yeah, I go up. No, nobody cares. Well, whoever said rudeness and politeness weren't cultural? Of course they are. And they were cultural in the first century. And I guarantee you what was rude in Jerusalem was not rude in Rome, and vice versa. And what was rude in Corinth when this was written was very, very different than what would have been rude somewhere in the non-Greek speaking world. But you know what? Culture is a part of what we live. And love is polite. Love says, please, thank you, you're welcome. Love doesn't interrupt someone's conversation. And that's my, if there is a failing I have, it is interrupting. Because I got so much stuff going on there, it all just wants to spill out. And I'm wrong. Because it's not polite. Our moms told us that, right? Well, it comes to find out, most of our moms probably had a pretty good idea of polite and not polite. Love honors a request to stop what others find annoying. I tease my kids more than I should. I tease lots of people more than I should. And they say, please stop. You think I do that? I got a love problem when I don't do that. And that points up the second thing about rudeness and politeness. It doesn't say if you meant to be rude. It does not say love does not mean to be rude. Love means to be polite. That's not what it says. It says love is not rude or love is polite. And I think the point that you want to take away from that is, to a certain extent, the people who are telling you they find something rude have the right to do that. Now, we're not talking about right and wrong. And somebody who tells me it's rude to talk about Christ will get told, no, it's not. But when it comes to all those little things that allow people to work together, that allows your message to get through to people, that allows my message to get through to you, I need to consider what the other person asks of me. Love honors a request. Love is empathetic to others' needs and tries to avoid giving offense. The idea of rudeness is giving offense. I do something, whether intentionally or unintentionally, that causes offense to someone. Politeness is avoiding offense. And love really tries to think about the other person. I mean, that's the whole definition of love in the Bible. God loved us by thinking about us enough to send His Son. And so the expression of love that says, look, I listen to you. I'll try not to offend. I'll avoid offense if I can at all do it and still be true to God. Love is polite. Love does not insist on its own way. More congregations of God's people have been damaged by a failure to pay attention to this one. Now, we're not talking about insisting on God's way. Let's get that free up front. We're talking about accommodating what other people need or what other people desire. To turn it around, love does defer to the will of others. We have a lot of people out here who've been married an awfully long time. I will be very surprised if you've been married that long without occasionally learning to say, sure, because you want it. Love defers. Love doesn't always say, you got to do it my way. How would that fill out? Well, kids, love gracefully accepts it when your dad or mom tells you that it'll be done his or her way. Now, that shades a little bit over into the point that you know about obeying your parents. But the truth is, the deference comes in the willingness to accept, the grace to accept. God doesn't just want, you know, kind of resentful. He wants you to gracefully defer. On parents, love is willing to go to Wendy's when that's what your kids want to do and you don't. Now, I'm not saying you have to make a diet of Wendy's, but let's face it. Does it really matter whether you eat your salad at Wendy's or your salad at Jason's? And for those of you out there who, and there's a few of you who really like Luby's, spouses, one time when your husband or wife says, I'd really like to go to Luby's today, say, sure, honey, whether you like the denture food or not. Love defers. And I use these trivial examples, but if you start applying it, you can find it everywhere in your life. Love compromises on opinion when it promotes peace. And this is back to this idea of how it doesn't so often work in our congregation. I'm not talking about truth, but there are lots of things I have pretty strong opinions about. For example, if somebody had decided to make those pews maroon, I might have had a problem. And I'm sure some of you would have a problem if I wanted to make them burnt orange. Good thing we appointed people who had no dog in the fight, right? But literally, I have had places and I've seen places where I'm surprised they didn't come up with four different colors of songbooks because nobody could agree on the songbook color. Trivial things. And we forget that love is designed to bring peace. More than anything else, love accommodates others' limitations. Sometimes they're physical limitations, sometimes they're intellectual limitations, sometimes they're character limitations. We need to be willing to defer to the will of others and not insist on a way. And you can just go through the rest of the text doing this. And like I said, if you don't like my examples, if you think my examples are dead wrong, that's okay. You find your own. But don't walk away from this text saying, love doesn't require me to change what I do, because it does. It does. And it's a very powerful tool if we'll just take and be a little introspective. The idea of introspection is an idea of stepping outside of yourself and looking at you, at how others look at you, and at how God looks at you, and saying, wow, I recognize this need to change. Now how do I do it? This helps. This helps. Love is foundational, eternal. It is the Christian's greatest characteristic. The unique thing about the love that the Bible describes is it's not limited to your family. It's not limited to your clan. It's not limited to your friends. It's not limited to people you like. It's for everyone. It should be, as you go about your life, and as I go about my life, the one overriding characteristic. It should play out in my day-to-day life. It requires me to mold my behavior to meet its demands. the words aren't hard. The application will take the rest of your life to understand, and the rest of my life to understand. And the application is every bit as hard at the age of 20 as it is the age of 85. Because there's always something else I can do to love. The only question is, will you change? Will I change? Will I allow these wonderful characteristics that Paul describes to the Corinthians, the solution to every one of their problems, was found in this text. So will we take and internalize those and change our behavior to match the demands? Read the words. Understand the words. Figure out what those words mean in your life. And then do them. Because it's what God expects of you. We love because He first loved us. And I don't personally think that the versions that says we love Him because He first loved us should have added the Him. The love we have for our God and for our brethren and for our family and for our enemies and for the lost requires that we behave in the ways that God describes. So will you do that? If we can help you be right before God, would you come as we stand and sing?